thanks to Sina for having me up here on this incredible array of speakers. Always hard to follow our friend Nicola Sell from the US Study Center, of course, and hard to follow her. And so I'm going to say my remarks less on US domestic per se and more about international matters. But then I'm being followed by Peter Bargee. Perhaps it's in both of our interests that I'm not following Peter, but Peter will follow me to clean up any misconceptions I leave about where Australian-US relationship is at the moment. And of course, it's always great to be back in my hometown. It's good to get back here on a regular basis because the place is changing so damn fast. It's remarkable what's happened up here in the 31 years since I left. So thank you. What I'll do is I'll talk less, as Sarah spoke about US domestic, I'll focus more on the Australia-US relationship and what's going on in that relationship at the moment as a consequence of the disruptor of chief and a few other big things that are going on in the region and trying to milk out what's of relevance here to Australia, which is a bit of signal, noise, cars and government. And that's kind of our talent at the US Study Center. On any given day, we'll get an invite to go to Sky or whatever, definitely for commentary on the heat of the day. And our talent has been to resist that, to put that to one side and try to stay focused on what's really going on and what's of relevance to Australia, Australian policymakers, Australian business, Australian households, and then what's like the garbage. So that leads me to just point out, look, there are multiple faces to the Trump presidency, and Sarah gave us a great presentation of some of the more obvious ones that we were aware of, his disregard for conventional presidential magnanimity, the non-stop garish self-promotion, the possible collusion with Russia, hang on porn stars, and on 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 it goes. On the other hand, the U.S. economy is doing pretty well. Under Trump's watch, the U.S. economy has grown above its long-term 3% growth rate. He is the beneficiary of a lot of hard yards done by the U.S. economy under the Obama years, bringing unemployment down to about 10% high immediately post-GFC. So now a number that's in the low 3%. And we still don't think that's what full employment in the U.S. looks like. That labor force participation rates are steady, reversing some secular declines in those. Interestingly, not as many white men in the labor force as there used to be. There's a whole other story about that. I mean, one of the big pathologies of American society at the moment is there are many. The Trump tax cuts do get some of the credit for this jolt to the U.S. economy. That is not just in the equities markets, but is accounting for real growth. Capital expenditure numbers all over the U.S. economy. Whatever you think about the feasibility of sustaining deficit spending at the level they are, the U.S. 2019, U.S. year-on-year federal deficit will go up to above 4% of GDP, in fact, probably mid-4s of GDP. That's a big number historically. Public debt in the U.S. is now comfortably over 100% of GDP. The comparable number in Australia is about 47% of GDP. And the tax cuts were throwing a lot of fuel on the fire in the U.S. where there's been a long period of growth following the GFC. A lot of economists wondering, is that really sustainable? Right now, the answer seems to be, more for the time being, yes. A lot of uncertainty, and that was reflected in the numbers about policy uncertainty. We saw this morning about the future direction of the U.S. economy, but Trump has to take his own some credit there. Some of it's by accident, frankly, some incompetence that Congress has been willing to Trump willing to get a deal done, and Congress piled on a lot of spending. Part of the U.S. Government expenditures that I pay a lot of attention to, the National Science Foundation. National Institute of Health, research money, are doing great. They're doing absolutely fantastic. Trump wanted a big budget, even part of America First was making America a research powerhouse. And Congress met his budget request and threw a little more on some good measures. So for those who sit higher ed, there is money pouring through the research sector of the United States at a rate we haven't seen for a long time. And so that's just one aspect of actually many good news stories in the U.S. at the moment, below the headline about Trump. And don't get me wrong, I mean, about Trump, but, you know, there's an awful lot else going on in the U.S. that I think it's incumbent for Australian audience to pay attention to. And one that we spent a lot of time in the U.S. Study Center looking at, and I think, and I'm going to just spend a couple of minutes on it because I think it's special relevance for this morning, is the energy story in the United States. The United States, while we weren't paying much attention, has become self-reliant with respect to energy. The United States, in the last 12 to 18 months, has become a net exporter of energy. And yes, it is true that Australia is now the world's largest, or soon will be next year, the world's largest exporter of LNG. But that's going to change in about 2024, where the United States will become the world's largest exporter of LNG. The gas revolution in the United States was quietly happening while we were watching other things around the world, but has been in America's recovery from the GFC, the role of cheap energy cannot be understated. And the reason we learned about this at the United States Study Center, we were interested in talking to firms, Australian firms, that had operations in both countries, and we discovered all sorts of amazing stuff. But cumulatively, the two-way investment relationship between the two countries is $1.6 trillion. $800 billion in from the US, cumulatively, the cumulative stock of investment, and $600 billion on the outbound, US super at work, over the US. In the course of doing that, though, we were talking to firms, Australian firms, and one with a Brisbane presence, a company called Scitech Timber, and they went, "We're not spending any money in Australia, we're going to the United States." And we said, "Why is that?" They said, "One word, energy." It's between $12 and $13 a gigajoule in Altona and Botany and Pinkenbach, versus $3 or $4 a gigajoule in Baton Rouge and New Orleans and Mobile, Alabama. And the can-do attitude from governors that want to beat the Louisiana governor, wants to beat the Mississippi governor, wants to beat the Alabama governor. This real can-do attitude to lock down this deal. Do not let the Aussies leave the room by signing those contracts today. And we're going to lock in $3 to $4 a gigajoule. Then energy-intensive business, which I take given, fertilizers, nitrates, explosives, stuff like that. Huge energy into their business. Australian domestic conversation about energy at the moment is very much focused on households, and that's understandable given the election coming close. But missing in the conversation in Australia, I think, are the fate of big industrial uses of energy, where it's switching between the deals they can get in the United States and the deals they get in Australia, and the role that that plays in powering growth in the US economy, independently of Trump this or tax cut that. There is this structural, long-term strength in the US economy. They've unlocked gas. Now, it changes everything for America. It makes America First, by the way, a strategic reality for them if they choose to go down the road. They need the Middle East in a way that they may have needed it before. They may need it for other reasons. But the imperative energy security that vests in the United States for the United States, by the way, is still coming to aid, and indeed part of the deal that Trump and Xi are talking about is that China will take more energy imports out of the US as part of the mix of things they might want to agree. No one would have thought that to be part of a US-China deal even 5 to 10 years ago. Remarkable how quickly that's happened. Remarkable instead of it. The other thing to say about gas is that it's a bridge fuel to a renewable future. Right now, the United States is beating Australia in greenhouse gas emissions per gigawatt of electricity generated. And it's not because 25 to 30% of American energy is produced by nuclear reactors. It's the gas fuel. CCGT in Australia accounts for single digits of our energy, of electricity generation stock in the United States is close to 30%. Both CC gas turbines are getting ever more efficient. And with respect to the greenhouse gas emissions, and it's really interesting spot in terms of cost and their greenhouse footprint. And so, you know, Australia, we've gone down a different path. America said, thou shalt not export a single jewel until we take care of our domestic requirement. Australia, we went down a different path. Australia, certain Australian jurisdictions have said, thou shalt not drill. And in American jurisdictions, the landowner has the mineral rights, not the state capital. And a lot of small to medium landowners in the United States are, hey, let's go, that's mine. And it's a different regime. One or two big structural things that are hard to unpick in Australia. But it seems to me that if you look at the American spirit of energy, we have high labor costs more respect than the standard for the company. We're not doing that in time soon. But if we give ourselves a leg up by exploiting cheap energy and other people, a lot of businesses that's left in the manufacturing sector in Australia. So it's one of the takeaways that meanwhile there's this show in DC that's horrible to look at those days. But meanwhile, out in the States, there are parts of the US economy that are just powering, literally powering, and cheap energy being part of the story. Similarly, out in the States, infrastructure. Now, Joe Hockey's our ambassador. He claims intellectual ownership of asset recycling. He's been preaching the gospel of triple P's every chance he gets in DC, and the United States Study Center, we accompany what was at the time, and still is actually, only last year, the most senior delegation of political leaders ever to go to the United States and Australia. So the Prime Minister, Queensland Premier, New South Wales Premier, Victorian Premier, you don't forget, like two chief ministers, and maybe another Premier, went all together, and the Hockey took with them IFM, Macquarie, Lendlease, QIC, Organization, and a lot of the world represented on this trip, essentially a trade show, trying to sell America, not the federal government, by the way. Where did they go? They went to the National Governors Association, and they're trying to do state to state, get the artists talking to their counterpart in Texas, India, on asset recycling. And it was remarkable to watch the way the vocabulary Australian premiers have for this stuff after a long history, lessons learned both good and bad around expertise and infrastructure provision with their American counterparts here in a different world. And I'm very reluctant to go down this road. There's been this great interest in this from Australian institutional investors. I've been dying to do more in the US in this space. Tremendous reticence from Americans who are, there's an irony here in the land of free, home of the brave, and low taxes. Once you pay your taxes, be damned, I'm paying a toll for the road. Isn't that my taxes at all? So there's some real reticence about triple P's in the US. But tremendous appetite from Australian institutional investors, and I can say our ambassador, Joe Hockey, has done tireless work, but to not much yield at this point, at least, in trying to promote that case and discovering that DC could actually be the last place where I could stop the conversation. Don't have it out in Austin, Texas, or Sacramento. The last topic I want to hit on is geopolitics. At a government-to-government level at the moment between Australia and the United States, there's one word that animates the conversation, that word is China. It's never, in my short experience in this role, but we have a remarkable sort of intimacy with people who have got carriage to Australia's relationship. The way that China enters into so many conversations between our two governments is remarkable. It's important for Australian audiences to understand the following. The change of tone in Washington with respect to China is not a Trump-specific phenomenon. The mode of execution is tariffs, and the hell with the WTO and all the rest of it. America first means we don't have to work with the United States institutions, and the allies will learn about it in their own good time, and we're going at it looking for our interests first. That mode of execution, right, why are you doing tariffs if you're doing problems with the intellectual property system, right, which could make sense to other people. That's all very Trump-specific. But But the strategic mindset that underlies it is not Trump-specific. It didn't matter who won the last presidential election. President Clinton would have a very tough alignment of China that Obama and Secretary Kerry did. And indeed, there's a lot of kind of frustration in D.C. about the conduct of China policy under Obama and Kerry. That's gone. Trump, in his own way, and the people around him, that talk is out of the bottle, and a lot of that pent-up, we have to do something about China, centered in D.C., is now finding voice in the National Security Council, in defense, in the State Department, and it is a bit of a buzzword, whole of government priorities for the United States. Members of our diplomatic team in Washington say China has a lot of time left in China. We want to find a friendly voice before they go to war street, but there is a good left in D.C. I think that's right. It is across the political spectrum, it's across the think tank world. Anybody who's going to take a job in government, no matter who is president of the United States, has adopted this mindset that enough is enough. If the IP theft, that it be down, that the United States is going to just walk quietly off the stage and hand it to the first country over to an authoritarian power. Or at least enable them. So why is that relevant to the Greens? Because the Australian government, with a speed that Peter can perhaps speak to in a way that I'm sort of surprised by, has announced in rapid fire a number of initiatives, some of them joint with the Americans, some of them trilateral with the Japanese, in also understanding the trade balance of the EU. And the pace with which initiatives were done, contracts were written for, undersea cables to be laid here and there, the initiatives with Japan, the US, on everything from infrastructure in the Indo-Pacific, public health, energy security, all of them, maybe they're in the works for a long time, can you achieve that, but they seem to arrive in the public square very, very quickly. And part of the strategy is giving the region a choice. And giving Australia, unmistakably, taking ownership of the region as specific part of our economic roots. That is indispensable. Now, if that makes life hard or harder for certain businesses, to my schedules, get used to it. It's not going away anytime soon. I see any change in that policy mindset in D.C., and not particularly in Canberra for that matter. Labor would occasionally levy a charge against the coalition that they've quote stuck up the China relationship. I actually think they've been handled pretty well. But get used to more of that. And it's all diplomacy. And it gets argy-bargy, and it gets awkward from time to time. But that's the world we're in. American canonical doctrines, the national security strategy, national defense strategy. From 9/11 to 2018, counterterrorism and counterinsurgency were our big priorities. We are back to an era of great power rivalry. And strategy does not come in things like a battlefield flag. Strategy will arrive through a fiber optic cable. And that mindset is very much taken hold. For Australians, certainly people who carry about relationship with the US are very frustrated with that mindset that's coming out of D.C. That's probably 15 minutes, so I'll leave it at that. But there's just a number of things that you want as you think about what else is going on in America.